नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Then fifth is on the board. Shri Rishir Uvacha Sadhu Prishtam Maharaja Haresh Charitam Adbhutam Yad Bhagavata Mahatmyam Bhagavat Bhakti Vardhanam Giyate Paramam Punyam Rishibhir Naradadibhi Natva Krishnaya Munaye Katayishye Hare Katam Giyate Paramam Punyam Rishibhir Naradadibhi Natva Krishnaya Munaye Katayishye Hare Katam Shri Rishi Uvacha. The sage Shri Sukadev Goswami said, Sadhu, excellent. Prishtam, inquiry. Maharaja, O great king. Hare, of the Supreme Lord Hari. Charitam, activities. Adbhutam,
wonderful.
Yat, from which
Bhagavata
of the Lord's devotee, Prahlad, Mahatmyam, the glories, Bhagavat Bhakti,
devotion to the Lord,
Vardhanam,
increasing.
Giyate
is sung.
Paramam,
foremost.
Punyam,
pious.
Rishibhi,
by the sages.
Narada Adibhi,
headed by Sri Narada Muni.
Natva,
after offering obeisances.
Krishnaya, to Krishna Dvaipayana Vyasa.
Munaye,
the great sage. Katayishye,
I shall narrate.
Harehe,
of Hari.
Katam,
the topics.
Translation. The great sage Sukadeva Goswami said, My dear king, you have put before me an excellent question. Discourses concerning the activities of the Lord, in which the glories of his devotees are also found, are extremely pleasing to devotees. Such wonderful topics always counteract the miseries of the materialistic way of life. Therefore, great sages like Narada always speak upon Srimad Bhagavatam, because it gives one the facility to hear and chant about the wonderful activities of the Lord. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto Srila Vyasadeva, and then begin describing topics concerning the activities of Lord Hari. Purport. In this verse, Sukadeva Goswami offers his respectful obeisances, Krishnaya Munaye, which means to Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas. One must first offer one's respectful obeisances to one's spiritual master. Sukadeva Goswami's spiritual master is his father, Vyasadeva. And therefore, he first offered his respectful obeisances to Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas, and then begins describing topics of Lord Hari. Whenever there is an opportunity to hear about the transcendental activities of the Lord, we must take it. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommends Kirtaniya Sadaharihi. One should always engage in Krishna Katha, by chanting and talking about Krishna and hearing about him. That is the only occupation of a Krishna conscious person. So here now is the beginning of the seventh canto. And here in the seventh canto, then, carrying on, the question is there that we see in the sixth canto that so many times the Lord is coming and killing the various demons. He's killed Vritrasura and arranged for that. He's arranged for the victory of Indra so many times. And Pariket Maharaj, he is thinking that the letters says in the Harinamrita Vyakaran, Narayan ad udbhuto yad varna kramaha, that in the order of the Sanskrit alphabet, the letters have come from the Lord. So these letters are also then, you know, considered special. Like that, if we see him in connection with the Lord, they are spiritual. Therefore, the Devanagari alphabet especially, or those alphabets that follow the, you know, pattern of the Devanagari, these are special. But it's also recommended that one pay attention. So if one is writing the Sanskrit alphabet or the Bengali alphabet, it may be very nice. One is meditating upon the Lord, but then in the Bhagavatam class, that's also meditating on the Lord, but in a different way. So if you can do both at once, fine, I don't mind. But if you find that by doing that, your concentration may be compromised, then it's better to hear. And then at another time, when you can't hear, then you can concentrate on the letters. Is that okay? See, hearing is not a waste of time. Like that. See, generally, when we find ourselves in a situation that we feel, you know, not very happy about, then we try to fill it in with other things. Like that. Like, let's say we're cooking for the Lord. Now, if we consider it a waste of time, but a necessary evil, then we may try to distract our mind by other things. But if we understand that cooking is very important and that we must concentrate and get every detail right, then we may not find that so important. You know, so I mean, I understand we may not be in a very inspiring position to, you know, say something that you will appreciate, but still, just as far as etiquette for the example for others, one should try to pay more attention. Does that make some sense? So the Lord here, Pariket Maharaj, he is concentrating, he has just now noticed that all these nice points have been made, and the Lord has saved his devotees time and time again. So, but to save his devotees, he's had to conquer the demons. He's conquered with Bali Maharaj, he's now then Vritrasura, then again with Diti. All these different aspects he has done, and Indra's always come out seemingly the winner, and the demons and all that, the losers. Though if we look at it very nicely, then it's not necessarily like that. Vritrasura went back to Godhead. Bali Maharaj became one of the Mahajans and enjoyed a kingdom greater than Indra's. And the Maruts became great devotees. So then, like this, then they are getting all nice benefits. So, but it looks as though their position and all these other things, wealth, humiliation, and all these other things are coming for them, and that's very bad. So because in the material world we value these things, then we'll say the Lord is being nice to Indra and not nice to the demons. So then Pariket Maharaj, then he knows that the Lord is equal because he's beyond the material creation. So then he is thinking, how is this possible? So now he asks this question to Sukadeva Goswami. How is it that the Lord is impartial when it appears that it's always Indra winning and the demons losing? Right? Like that. And in this canto, we'll also hear Pallad winning, Hiranyakashipu losing, Shiva winning, the demons in their three cities losing, like that. So it just goes on and on and on, story after story. The demigods always win, the demons always lose. So then here, he is asking this question. That's very important to understand. He's asking the question because he is convinced that the Lord is impartial, the Lord is transcendental. So then he is wondering, how is it that this seeming contradiction is there? So he wants to deepen his conviction. It's not that he has a doubt, he's thrown everything out, come to his conclusions, everything, write everything off, and then, but he wants to confirm what he understands. But he himself is unable to see it. The way his spiritual masters explained it, then he finds that he doesn't understand it. So therefore, he then asks this question. And we see here that Sukadeva Goswami, he considers this question very wonderful because it is well thought out. It's in connection with the Lord. It's the next natural step. It means he has heard all these things. So now, how do we understand the Lord is impartial? Because it seems that he is. He's performing all these pastimes with his devotees. He's with them. He's helping in the intrigues in the Mahabharata. And all these different things, he's arranging, orchestrating the whole thing. So how is it that he's impartial? So then, so Sukadeva is very happy that he is thought, he's heard, and trying to apply all these things in his life, he's come up with a question. Because if we're trying to apply, that's when the questions come. If we're not trying to apply, then many times questions don't come. But if we really think about it, now how will I... and put this into my life, then the question may arise. Because then we're not sure, or there's a doubt, or, you know, we don't quite have enough understanding to be able to apply it. So the idea is the knowledge must come from theory to practical. It must be practical. Then we apply it in our life. So then Sukadeva Goswami is very happy because this is a very practical question. Another aspect of that so is wonderful about this question is that it's about the Lord and his devotees. It says, in which the glories of his devotees are also found. Discourses concerning the activities of the Lord in which the glories of his devotees are also found. That's why then these pastimes are very, very attractive, because the Lord and his devotees together, that is found. Like in the creation, then when we talk about the creation, the various elements unfolding in this, it's the Lord and his energy, but because we don't see the interaction between him and the energy, then it's not as attractive as when we see it's in relation to the, like the Lord with Brahma, their discussions or the different things that go on there. Or, you know, or the even just the elements of creation, when we see it in relationship to the Suris, the great sages, and Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, when he creates everything, and how then he manifests everything. So the whole thing is the Lord and his devotees, that becomes very attractive. If the Lord's not with the devotees, then it is not as attractive. So here he's very happy with this question, because then he's asking about the relationship between the Lord, his devotees, and the non-devotees. So relationship is being considered here. So this becomes very nice. So now to answer this, because this is a very, you know, major question, is that now he offers his respectful obeisances unto his spiritual master. Sukadeva Goswami is offering respects to Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas. So here when it says Krishnaya, Krishnaya Munaye, so this Krishnaya, Krishna means Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas. So this is being pointed out, he's not approaching the Lord directly. That is not done. We don't approach the Lord directly. It's always through the devotees. So when it's through the devotees, then the Lord is very pleased, because then the devotees are involved. You have the Lord, the devotees. We go straight to the Lord, then it's us and the Lord. you know, which is nice, but more nice is the Lord His devotees than us. So this is the next point is here, is that He's offering respects to His spiritual master. So then it becomes very nice. Then it becomes very special. Then the next point is that the devotees, why is it? Because they always like to discuss about the Supreme Lord. They always like to hear about the Supreme Lord. This is what they want to hear. So now, all the pastimes of the Lord and His devotees, these are very, very nice. They sound very nice. They hear, you know, we're very inspired by them. And we can apply them in our life. They're very practical. When we hear the stories of the Lord and His devotees, then we can see how do we apply this in our life. Because it's the devotees, of course, it's always much more amazing and wonderful. But it is no less special when applied into our life. But it's just some of the detail may not look exactly the same, like that. But it will be there. The principle will always be there of the dependence upon the Lord, the reciprocation between the Lord and His devotees. These aspects will be there. So this is put here. So the devotee always wants to hear about the Lord. If we're always absorbed in the pastimes of the Lord, then we are on the transcendental platform. And then, like here, it always counteracts the miseries of the materialistic way of life. The material world is always a difficulty. There's always problems of the material world. So by hearing about the Lord, hearing about His devotees, then we're hearing about the activities in the material world that are spiritual, that are transcendental. And these counteract, then, the difficulties of the material world. Because then we see in our life how to connect everything with the Lord, how they have connected, and how we can connect everything to the Lord. Then it becomes very special, very nice. Any questions on this? No? Another aspect here of... You had something?
Yeah. What is the main obstacle that we have to overcome in order to make this connection with the Lord?
The main obstacle is basically envy. Because we put ourselves in the center of things rather than Krishna in the center. And then from that envy then creates duality. So then there's attachment, rejection, or happiness, distress, all these different things. And then we become caught up in these, accepting and rejecting. We come onto the platform of the mind. So we accept those things that will make us happy according to our present concept of happiness, and we reject those things that due to our present concept of unhappiness we don't like. So the envy then means that we generally have a tendency to consider ourselves first and look at everything from our particular vantage point exclusively. Then if we are a little more broad-minded, then we might bring others in, but still in connection with us. Like, you know, family members, some friends, or an ideology. Others have the same ideology, so we'll count them with us. But it still has this connection to, you know, it still starts from us. So then, the best platform is that we start with the Lord, and then from the Lord come back to us. Like that, what will please the Lord, then we look at it without the duality, our situation, and then on the situation around us, and then try to apply that. What is the Lord's suggestion? What are the Acharya's suggestion? What does the spiritual master say? So then it takes on a completely different flavor. You completely avoid all the disturbances of passion and ignorance because of our own desire and hankering, lamenting, false ego, all these things. But generally we find that in the beginning, when we take up devotional service on the platform of sadhana bhakti, we understand the theory, but in practice, it doesn't come easy. We just automatically see ourselves, see the situation, and then look out from there. So then, Krishna has created, because it's in connection with him, whatever's in connection, like the demons, even they envy him, they're getting liberation. They're envious of him, he kills them, they're getting liberated. So they're free, they're brought to that platform of having no duality like this. But, because they don't have love for the Lord, they can't get into the spiritual realm. So they're kind of in the middle. So then for the devotee, because he's doing for the Lord, there may be so many things in the heart, so naturally his position is going to be even better than the demons. The demons being inimical to the Lord, they act in relation to the Lord, then they get to the platform of liberation. So the devotee, because he is trying to act in friendship with the Lord, or some kind of relationship with the Lord, in service to the Lord, then he goes beyond that. So that takes him across to, with time, by the Lord's blessings, to prema. So his position is better. So liberation is automatically included. So now, in between for us is then, we do something for the Lord, but we may start from ourselves and see ourselves and what we want and all this, and then try to fit that in with the Lord. But that works because it touched the Lord. Because it's in connection with the Lord, then it does work. It does purify us. It does uplift us. It deals with the desire. We got our result. And then, you know, we find that it wasn't actually what we were thinking was meant to be anyway. And then slowly we start to, by this practice, see the Lord more prominent than ourselves. And in this way we gradually come to where we see the Lord first and then ourselves. So it's such a perfect system that even if it's performed at its beginning stages, one is getting transcendental result, and one is getting more result than the greatest karmis and jnanis and yogis in the universe, even though they may be highly situated, and you know, like Durvasa, greatly situated, powerful mystic. But just the neophyte devotee is in a better position than him, the newest devotee, because they actually are doing something in contact with the Lord, while he's just a great mystic and yogi and powerful and all these things, but it's not connected with the Lord, therefore it doesn't have any real substance. So the main obstacle is that we're always so self-centered, but self-centered meaning the mind. We're not actually bringing the soul as the center. If we bring the soul as the center, come to that point, that's the point of liberation. And so then from there it's very easy to go to where you make the Supreme Lord as the center. Because once you get to the platform of the soul, the super soul is there, and he's in the heart of the living entity. So he becomes very close then, yes.
If that's true, then why do people who are on the, more or less, very close to the Brahman platform, the impersonal platform, why do they reject devotional service? Do you say it's very easy for them to jump to that?
No, not them. Oh. Means the from that platform. But that's only because you know about the Lord or have value of the Lord. Otherwise, the impersonalist problem is they may get to the stage of liberation, but because they aren't interested in the Lord, they can't go beyond it. So they stop there. That's the end of the line. And since it is not a natural position for the living entity, it's lacking addressing their nature of chit and ananda. So it's not full in knowledge and there's no activity. So it won't satisfy them. So they fall back into the material world. Well, the devotee comes to that platform, but because he's seeing Krishna, he goes beyond that. It's not. It's just it's just seeing something else you may not notice in between. Like you see a friend on the other side of the door. You walk through the door, you don't notice the door. Yes, now I'm moving, now I'm going through the door, now I'm approaching. No, it's just you see the friend, you go through automatically. So the liberation, point of liberation is there, but it's not even noticed or really considered by the devotee. It's just something they go through on their way to developing love for Krishna. Like that. So we don't put that much emphasis on it, because it's automatic. It just, with the process, comes. While the yogis and the mystics and the impersonalists put great emphasis on it, because that is their goal. So all they talk about is that. And that's all the farther they can get, because they don't know beyond it. They don't know the Lord, they don't know His activities, His devotees, His pastimes, His planet. Is that? Yeah, like that. So the whole point is when we become Krishna conscious, then we basically become Krishna's in the center. Though in the beginning, Krishna conscious may mean we consider ourselves in the center, but Krishna is connected. So even though it may not be as direct, Krishna is there. And that is perfect, though it's not the most perfect, right? It's perfect, but there are more perfect platforms of perfection where Krishna is fully the center, like that. Is that?
This is pretty easy.
Easy. Chant Hare Krishna, be happy. Thing is if we can absorb ourselves in these things. Difficulties come as if that comes naturally or very easily. Then we can absorb ourselves. We find the chanting, the reading, the associating, you know, kirtans and like that is very nice, the preaching and our whatever we're doing in connection with preaching. Then we find it goes very easy. If we find that the mind has other distractions than that, then we have to see how to connect them to the Lord. Like that. So it keeps us busy. So it's just a matter of whether we see the thing, the problem, then we can either, what is my consideration? You know, how do I think about this? Then, what does the Lord say on this? Or we can start with the Lord and go, what does the Lord say about this thing? And so since I'm in that position, then that's what I should do. So it's just a matter, same point, is you have a situation, material world, and now it's just a matter if I start from myself or start from Krishna. So I can start from Krishna, myself, then the situation, or myself, the situation, then Krishna. Either way, we're going to get the result. It's just the one gives greater happiness because you go to Krishna first. So the relationship is deeper. And our the mind and body are secondary, which give less satisfaction anyway. Oh, but in the beginning, since we're not accustomed to that, we're going to generally see everything in relationship to the body and mind anyway. That's our conditioning. So we'll see ourselves, the mind, the situation, what we want, then we generally check, does that please Krishna? And make some adjustments if it doesn't. Like that. It sometimes is more difficult because then if we find what Krishna wants and what we want is a little different, then we have that process of adjusting sometimes is more, you know, disturbing because we're having to deal with passion, ignorance, like that, or even sometimes attachment to goodness. And then it's a little more difficult. Or if we start the other way around, then you're automatically free. You know, one is on the liberated platform, and then looking at it, there's no passion, ignorance. So then it works more simply. Does that make? In other words, we start with the one, and with practice, we'll get to the other. But if we don't know about the other, then we won't kind of endeavor for it. But it's understood we start where we are today, look at it, try to adjust it, and fit it into Krishna consciousness. And because we fit it into Krishna consciousness, then it becomes spiritual. We advance. Then the other just naturally comes with time. Right, you're worried about how much time. Yeah. Oh well. Yes.
So what's actually recommended that you take Krishna and just go, even though it's not your nature's telling you something else, you just get Krishna's angle, bite the bullet and go for it, or you act naturally your way and go.
Well, the both are, see, how you say, one is, when we say naturally from our side, that means naturally according to the conditioned mind and body. It has actually nothing to do with us. And the other naturally is then Krishna and the soul. That's more natural, but we haven't practiced it since time immemorial. Or actually, we've never really practiced it. So then the difficulty comes is just making that change. Same principles there. But it's just a matter of You know, it's like we're used to something. We go someplace in a certain way. We know it. We're used to it. Someone else is telling us a different way to do that's easier and gives a better result. But we're a little reluctant because we know the one and we're fearful of the other. So because of being in the material world, we're fearful. So we're fearful of that. We're dependent. We're fearful upon what we're going to lose. We're going to lose those things that we get our strength from. So then, you know, our position or our prestige or our ego or our money or persons we know, like this. So, but because of that fear, then we're afraid to check the other one, like that. Because that you have to give up the fear, because the Lord is there. The Lord takes care. But once we try it, then we see it's very nice. So it's basically just getting us to try it enough that we start to see that one is better than the other. Then once we see, we may be convinced, but still the mind is well practiced at other things. It takes a while for the mind to accept. Though we've accepted, the intelligence is accepted. But the mind still, by habit, always does whatever it's used to. And then one has to be determined, and it takes time. That's why it's called buddhi yoga. That's the stage, like buddhi yoga. The intelligence then is pushing. That we start that in sadhana bhakti, that is started, because by intelligence you know you should do it. But it's like you're doing it purely out of faith. But with time you actually see, and your faith is deepened. So then it's like you're more controlling it rather than the mind with the intelligence, rather than just being, you know, somehow or another it was a good day, you were Krishna conscious, and then the modes take over again, and after a few months, you know, a little light pops up, and then again underneath, you know, like that. So then...
But even when, even you take the Lord's view, the view of the scriptures, and you apply it, there's so many choices. Even
yeah, within there's so many choices.
There's so many choices.
Yeah.
And then, so then the question is, well, you have the spiritual master, well, he may not be around. Then you have the devotees, but they're telling you so many different things. One saying this, one saying that.
Yeah, well, ultimately is...
Why is he saying that? Why is he telling you like that? Maybe what's his interest? Or maybe,
Yeah. Well, it has to... So whatever our activity has to be based on guru, sadhu, and shastra. So then, ideally, we try to set ourselves up and live and work with those that we have that faith in, or we can work, or at least just follow the etiquette with. You know, if it's not dealing in such a, you know, it's the dealings are much more external, then even if one doesn't necessarily see eye to eye, if it's connected to Krishna, it's not so important, you know, which it is. But if it's going to actually affect our spiritual life, then ultimately, you know, we have to do that activity that we can take responsibility for. But we have to see that it's supporting the Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Otherwise, sometimes devotees say, well, I have to make my own path, make my own way. I can't depend upon anyone. But then if they give up dependence on Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, then that's an illusory path. But if they see that they're not getting support or direction, then they have to make a decision. They have to make their own decision. You can't make a decision and blame it on someone else, really. We ultimately have to accept responsibility for our own how we're progressing, like that. Though we may be seriously influenced by others. Was your question answered? I kind of got there, and then I kind of went. Not sure.
Not really.
Yes, maybe we could say it again.
Is it better to what we call our natural condition state now? Should we follow that?
Yeah. Okay. So, see, the whole thing is we have the ideal, and then we have the practical where we're at. So, practical has to be connected to ideal. This is the difference between the view of the devotee and the brahminical outlook. Is practical and ideal have to be connected. like that. And then wherever in between is practical. It means the situation now and the ideal, I have to, they both have to work together. So whether it's more emphasizing the situation or more the ideal, then that's up to this, you know, what is best to apply. But if we just take the practical situation and do something without the ideal, how do we know what the direction is? Like that. It'll go the direction of whatever the ideal was, the value was. So sometimes we have to be very careful, being pragmatic. If it's not based on Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, on the principles, we may go off in another direction.
No, we're talking about, we know the ideal.
Okay, but my point is here is that ideal has to always be considered. Because generally you get some, those who talk ideal all the time, those who talk practical all the time. But you have to get the both. Those you find are the most successful. They get things done and they are Krishna conscious. Otherwise, the one may be, you know, talking nicely all the time gets nothing done. Otherwise, gets something done may not be so Krishna conscious. Like that. So when you balance the two, then that's the thing. So in the beginning, one will automatically start from oneself, and that's expected. That's understood. That's the whole process of anishta bhajana kriya. When you have the process of performing devotional activities, the sadhana bhakti, and it's unsteady, I mean, sometimes we're more enthusiastic, sometimes there's more influence of the modes of nature. That means we're starting with ourself. Like that, so we do, we see, what do I want to do? Prabhupada would ask the devotee, what do you want to do for Krishna?
You have to come in like that. Right?
Yeah, you have to come in like that. That's just the way it is. It has to be done. Because that's what you're going to do anyway, so you do it for Krishna. Like you know, a dog's going to go up to things, sniff it, and eat it if it's edible. So therefore, knowing that, we put something down that's prasad, and they'll go up and sniff it and eat it. And they go back, and they make spiritual advancement. They're going to do. We can't expect that they're going to, you know, do something else. They're not going to, you know, they're going to do that. So we understand the nature's there. It's going to happen in that way. So because it's going to happen in that way, therefore, we follow it in that way, but we just see that it's in line with Krishna. We see that it's according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. So that's the way we start. Then as we become more purified, then that nature is still going to be there, but we're not attached to the results of that nature. But we see that that's the nature, so why create any difficulty? We're moving in the world, we move with that nature. But Krishna becomes the center there. One doesn't put one's own ideas on top of the service. One sees the service and then one brings one's ideas in line with that. But one is still dealing with the conditioned nature. And then when one, the Uttama, then they don't have to deal with the nature. They're beyond the nature. Because you come to Brahma-Bhuta, it doesn't have to be considered. Like the Goswami, they wouldn't have to eat. They wouldn't have to sleep. You know, Bhugarbha Goswami didn't bother with sleeping at all. The other Goswamis would sleep an hour and a half, 2 hours a day, if they remembered. You know? But Bhugarbha just never slept. That's just the way he was. He just didn't bother. Raghunath Das Goswami basically never ate. You know, every other day taking, you know, a little how much charinamrita fits in your palm and drinking that, most people would not consider that like a you know, full, you know, a meal like that. Yeah, so therefore they just didn't bother with it. But as long as we are conditioned, we do bother with it. Now it's just a matter of if we start from ourselves first or start with Krishna first. In either way, we'll come back to the conditioned nature and engage it in the Lord's service. But it's just a matter of whether it's basically free from desire or whether it still has desire. That's all. Whether it's sakam or nishkam. That's the element. You know? So that's all. It's just like, we want to preach. Okay, so we're here in India. So then, we have something to say. If we just go out looking like everybody else, no one's going to stop and listen. But if we dress like sadhus, then they don't necessarily respect devotional service or Bhagavatam or God or any of these things. But because of their conditioned nature, they respect the social customs of hearing from a sadhu. So therefore, then we will dress in the way and all these things, and therefore, then we follow the social customs because it's beneficial for the preaching. Like that. The other way is that I don't want to be involved in the world, so therefore I dress as a sadhu. That sets me apart from the people. And then since I'm doing that as a sadhu, I should study something about Krishna. It's my duty to speak to others. So you get the same result, but it's just the flavor is going to be different. You know, one is going to be very, you know, freed of contamination. The other is going to be taking your contamination and dealing with it. Like that. Like this. So the result will be this. Basically, the external result looks exactly the same, but the mentality is a little bit different. So it doesn't means the point is one starts with ourself, and in seeing from there and engaging, and then we come to the other. But as this point again, Agami Prabhu is if you know the other's there, one will always be looking out for. So now and again, one may start that way. Though most of the time, we will start with ourselves always. Like that. Does that make sense? So that's the whole process of sadhana bhakti, is that the beginning means is that we're just taking ourselves, our conditioned nature, and engaging in the Lord's service according to His directions.
So we understand Krishna's what we should be doing, and we know that. We understand what we should do, so we should. We're trying to adopt that. This is more intelligent to do it from Krishna's angle of vision. So that means how much we can tolerate our conditional nature. We should do that much for Krishna's angle of vision.
No. Because we bring it down to the conditioned nature. So you come back to basically doing the same activity. The only difference is the change in the consciousness, or the change in that. That's the thing. Is that devotional service is not actually the activity. Because the activity has been engaged in devotional service, it's also called devotional service. Right? It's just like, is fire cooking on its own? No. Is a pot cooking? No. Is sabji just sitting there cooking? No. So, and if you take all those things and put them all together and let them sit there, anything will happen? No. We go in there and make it happen. So we call the pots, all the different knives and the vegetables and the fire and all those things. We all call that cooking. But actually, it's not. The process is that whatever you're doing is by the process of going through heat is becoming, soft, so it's edible. So devotional service is the mentality in which the activity is done. Then, because God is a person and He wants to reciprocate with the others, there's mediums through which that is shown. Therefore, the various activities, the 9 activities of devotional service are there. So the activity itself is not devotional service. Because it is done for the Lord, it becomes devotional service. Like we speak through this mic. Speaking through a microphone, people are doing it all over. It's not devotional service. Only when we speak about Krishna through it is devotional service. We can also speak about Krishna without the mic. So the mic is not the essential element. Like that. So, but in the beginning, because we're so used to these things, like there's someone, he won't speak without a mic. So therefore, yes, arrange for him a mic and let him speak about Krishna. Like that. Because the conditioned nature is there. Without that, he won't do. Like we chant Hare Krishna. Someone won't sing unless everything's perfect. Mridanga is perfect. The kartal is perfect. Everything's perfect. The situation's perfect. No one's making any noise. Then they can sit down and do a nice bhajan and feel some satisfaction, some nice feeling. But if somebody's not playing right, some kids yelling and screaming, too many guests are coming in, something's wrong. The voice is not good that day. Then they can't sing. So you therefore try to arrange everything perfectly so that they can engage in Krishna service. I was like, all these buildings is that. Prabhupada could sit down under a tree here in Mayapur, but we will not be able. So we build all these buildings so we could come and sit down here. Not that the buildings are important. Sitting down in Mayapur and engaging ourselves in devotional activities is important. So to do that, if we need a building, we'll build a building. People should do devotional service. That's all. So if you need to create the environment, only in a certain environment you can do, then we create that environment. But the environment itself is not devotional service. The creating that environment so people can do devotional service, that's the service. And using that environment in Krishna's service, that's the service. But the externals themselves aren't. The body itself is not devotional service. But that I engage it in Lord's service is. So that's the thing, is that in the beginning one sees more the karma side, later one sees more the jnana side, and later one doesn't bother with either of those. So it's just a matter of the approaches to it. Like that. The Gita, the first chapters are telling about the activity, emphasizing that side. The last chapters are emphasizing the knowledge side of it. But ultimately, it's just the devotion, like that. Because the intelligence is still also a material element. The mind's a material element. The body's a material element. So ultimately, it's the soul's relationship with God. And when that's fully developed, then one develops a spiritual form. A spiritual form develops. But in the meantime, this form, because it's being engaged in devotional service, then is considered spiritual. Right? To that degree it's engaged, to that degree it becomes surcharged. So, does that make any sense? So it has to be done. That's the difficulty. Janani Vaspuri was mentioning, is you get, some will talk, all the rules and regulations and all, you know, varnashram and this and that and so many things. And then others go, no, it doesn't have to be done at all. So what you get is you get the view of the kanista, get the view of the uttama. But as a preaching mission, we take the middle, the madhyama. The uttamas come down to the madhya platform. The kanistas always act in the duties of the madhyama. Though their consciousness may be kanista, they're performing madhyama duties. The uttama may be an uttama consciousness, but performing madhyama duties. So that madhyama path is the activities are performed, but only for Krishna's pleasure. We want to please Krishna, we do it in this way. Like that. So therefore you'll see the form, social form and these and that, but that's not, we don't see that is how we're going to get back to Godhead. We're not going to go back to Godhead by varnashram or by all the rules and regulations. We're going to go back to Godhead because of devotion. But because Krishna does these things when he's here, he acts as a kshatriya, acts as a vaishya, acts as a householder, as a brahmachari. Therefore, we also do those things. It pleases him. But we're not thinking that by varnashram we're going to become perfect, or by all our rules and regulations we're going to become perfect, or by giving them up we're going to become perfect. Sajji, as we give them up, we become perfect. Just that I'm not following the rules, right? I surrender to the Lord. I'm a karmi. Then I hear about, you know, Vaishnavism and Lord Chaitanya. Then I surrender. And then I hear about these rules which I give up. So I've never followed them. Like that. So it doesn't, you know, so you have that side. And then the other side is that, you know, the rule itself is going to get you a result. I worshipped like this. I worshipped Indra. It has to rain. I did it, right? I'm the center. Like that. Or the other is I'm the center. All these rules don't matter. Like that. So the real point is for us as preachers is we take that middle. Is we follow it as much as our consciousness is absorbed in it. But the basic, you know, form of it will be there. There has to be some form. Like I'm going to serve you prasad, there has to be something with which there has to be something I carry it in, whether it's a pot or a clay pot or a steel pot or a bucket or. And there has to be some way to get it onto your plate. It should be a plate. So those forms will be there, but that's not the main thing. The main thing is serving, eating, enjoying the association. It's prasadam for glorifying the Lord. But some will get into, you know, what the bowl is, what the plate is, this, that, and so many things. And that is perfection. If that's perfect, even if we're not Krishna conscious, then it's okay. But if there's something distracting, we're not Krishna conscious, like I'm coming to serve prasad, you don't have a plate. You know, that's not proper etiquette. I'm not respecting the Vaishnavas, I'm not respecting prasad. So therefore, I see you and give you a plate. Then I serve prasad. So someone may make that comment because it's not actually in the proper mood of devotional service. Because it's not in the mood, therefore it's done. Not that it's the rule that there must be a plate. No, for us it's devotional service. Vaishnavas are respected, there's a culture in which that's done, so the externals come. So we start from the in and the comes the out. We don't, you know, but in the beginning we have to start from the outside and then slowly, slowly we'll get in. We do the gross, then after a while we notice that the mind exists. The intelligence exists. They're two different things, right? Every day we listen to them argue with each other. But we don't see them as separate. We think that's me. Then we understand, I'm not that. There's me. Then there's this mind and intelligence arguing with each other. And then there's this body that has all whatever it wants. It's hungry, it's tired, it's this, it's that. And then we see that we're completely separate from these things. And then ultimately we get to the point, it's the devotion. Like that. So you're just going through the stage of gross, I say, you know, gross matter, subtle matter, and spiritual. So it goes that, but we start from the connecting the gross to spiritual, then the subtle to spiritual, then the two are discarded and it's just spiritual. Does that make any sense?
So we put Krishna first, but then there's also levels of surrender.
Yeah, yeah.
To
yeah, so that's the thing, is when the surrender is not so much, then kind of we consider the situation and how much we're willing to surrender this and that, then we put Krishna there. Like that. The others, we put Krishna there first, and then we look around, what is our situation.
The
dovetailing means the grosser dovetailing, means just the standard, you know, process of sadhana, is we see what is our situation, what directions does Krishna give for engaging that situation in his service, like that. So we see ourselves, we see our conditioning, we see our situation, see, you know, what needs to be done, then we, how that can be done for Krishna, like that. The other dovetailing is you're dovetailing the subtle body. Because the gross comes automatically with it. Is you see what pleases Krishna, and then, okay, what is the subtle nature, and engage that. Automatically the gross will follow. Like that. So both ways you're dovetailing. Only when we come to the Uttama platform there's no dovetailing, no need to. So like that. So we don't. Means we ourselves may personally be coming to that Uttama platform, but how you say, we always work on the Madhyama platform. You know? Though, even though the consciousness may be Kanista, we still are preachers and we are involved in the Christian mission. So what's happening is our service is always the same. The neophyte and the very advanced devotee, you're always going to see Madhyama activities. But due to their level of consciousness, then you may see more inspiring or lesser inspiring results. Like that. That makes sense. Okay, yes.
Yeah, Guru tells his disciple to do something, and the disciple thinks not my nature. What is the situation?
Then one presents one's doubt. Because idea is one wants to please Krishna by pleasing the spiritual master. And one wants to follow the instructions of the spiritual master to go back to Godhead. So then if the instruction of the spiritual master doesn't seem to match our situation, then we're not sure how to apply it. So that doubt has arisen, we inquire. We ask that doubt. Like Arjuna, Krishna has explained the whole Ashtanga Yoga system. And he has a doubt. I'm a Kshatriya, I'm passionate, I can't sit down like that. So I don't feel that this is going to be right for me. Could you please explain? So either he'll explain how it is right for him and how he can do it, or he'll explain how actually maybe it isn't right for him and he should do something else. But if our desire is sincere to get the Krishna consciousness result by pleasing Guru Krishna, then it will work. But if it's a matter we don't want to surrender, don't want to do, that will be a problem. But in any case, still we should present it. But we should still, if we're going to present it, we should be expecting an answer. You know, we should be expecting an answer. We shouldn't. Otherwise, many times as we ask a question and we get an answer, then we say, no, no. Then we re-ask the question, and then we get a little bit more specific. And we keep going until, you know, either we get the answer we want, or we figure out that it's not, we can't get the answer we want. like that. But that kind of thing we try to avoid. But The inquiry is, having doubt is natural for being in the material world. And inquiring to remove that doubt, that is the Krishna conscious position. So if we're given an order, we don't understand it, it is not un-Krishna conscious to ask. It's not in Krishna conscious to want to know how to properly apply it. Like that. Of course, if one has been told a million times, then that's another thing. Then it may cause some... Then the answer may come a little more strongly. You know, to cut through the ignorance. But if we're under... But to inquire is not a problem. To not understand and then want to understand so one inquires, that's proper. It's not improper. Sometimes devotees don't know. I remember in Poland we were discussing and asking questions and this. And then devotees started asking, somehow or another somebody asked a question. It was a very simple question. You know, it was something that you would have, question that would have come up in the first couple of days that you joined Krishna consciousness. But because they were embarrassed, because everybody else seemed to be doing and all this and that, they thought themselves foolish for not understanding. So after 15 years, they're asking like that. So it's not wrong, you know. Though sometimes we do goof with others, means they ask a question, we say that's foolish or this or that. But if one is sincere, then it, you know, should always be answered. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah, I think we should.
You are mentioning that the subtle comes after the gross, right?
No, the gross comes after the subtle.
Oh, right.
Means in application, we're going to start with our gross body and look at that, then look at it back into the subtle and go that way. But what I'm saying is that it works from subtle to gross. That we have a desire, want to do an activity, start with the mind. So we're going to start with that situation, what we want, what's the fruit we want. Then we're going to look at that, well, okay, how to engage that in Krishna's service. And then we're going to go back that way. But in fact, it comes down the other way. It started with the mind, then comes to the gross body. But how we get out of it is generally start with the gross body, going back that way. You know, our just awareness.
How do you explain, like, if someone has, more facility to control the mind in some respects, in terms of relationships or whatever, but has more difficulty dealing with his gross body, like, for needs more sleep or things like that? How do you explain that this may happen simultaneously?
Because they're two different things, the gross and subtle body. See, it's that the subtle body is going to be there. And relationships with others, you use the gross body for that. So basically how they use the gross body may create the situations. Like they may be very good with dealing with other people, so good that they stay up till midnight talking. So then we find that their health and all these things may not be so good. The effect of that will be there, you know, or they're so, you know, how you say, so pleasantly can perform sinful activities with other people, and that destroys the body. So it's one has to see what that means, that they're good at relationships, but what does that mean?
No, controlling the mind, controlling the senses. Controlling the mind, it's like one may have more facility to control the mind in terms of people's relationships, illicit relationships.
Okay.
But nice. Not be able to control one's own person.
If one's controlling the mind, then the sinful activities, this and that, won't be done. Here it's just a matter of everyone has to eat according to their needs or sleep according to their needs. But one is always trying to purify that. Like that. Because we mentioned is everything's not all that, it doesn't all happen all together. Everything kind of happens, you know, at different points. So our consciousness may be moving, our control of the mind. That's why it's very important to be in association of devotees, because every devotee is concentrating in a different area. due to their own conditioned nature, and therefore they will advance more quickly in that area, another area they may not have noticed or they didn't focus on it. So by association, then one gets the benefits of all those different levels of advancement. Like that. So it's just a matter of practice, and then the others will adjust. They will adjust, though it may take longer. That's just where one's weakness is. You know? Point is if one has 100 desires, and by sadhana and intelligence and control and austerity, one cuts that down to 3. One has a very controlled mind, you know, very regulated, like this kind of way, but still one has 3 desires. Right? So one may have a strong mind from performing that kind of activity in this life or past life, but one still hasn't come to the liberated platform. There's no desires. So therefore, one may see some desires. But if we're only dealing with a couple, then we know that's fairly good. That's better than having hundreds or thousands. Right? Any is bad. But if you see that there's control and there's so many things, but there's some still strong desires, one understands so much has been cleared away. This is an advanced person. Right? Their situation is an advanced position. But they still have to deal. Like you take Durvasa Muni, very advanced, very austere. But when it comes to his ego and him being the best, he is completely uncontrolled. But it's down to that one. He is the best. You know, he's an incarnation of the mode of ignorance. So that pride is there. He has no problem controlling the senses. You know, he's offered lunch by Ambarish Maharaj. They've just been walking all day. He goes down to the river to take his bath and then gets absorbed in his meditation and completely forgets about eating. So if he couldn't control his, he would have just sat down then and ate. So he's controlled in that. He lives very austere. He's always on the move. Doesn't have a residence. But that one thing is there. So that's the point is that control of the mind is one of the aspects, but ultimately it's still material. Therefore, devotion is the real thing. So it may be very controlled mind, but no devotion, then there's always a chance that will take them off in some other way, in an impersonal direction.
What is he meditating on?
He just meditates on Brahman, that I understand. It mentions in the... I think it mentions in the verse that he went out, took his bath, and then they're supposed to... The end of the bath, then the final bath aspect is called as Manasika Snan, where one meditates on... We meditate on the Lord. We think of the Lord, and then the last part of the bath, or it's like after we've taken the bath and that last, you know, freezing cold rinse, we remember the Lord. So that kind of a thing, that's the Manasika Snan. So one's meditating upon one's deity. Theirs is the impersonal Brahman. To do that, they got to do pranayama, they got to do so many things because the mind doesn't readily accept the impersonal. So it becomes more of a ritual for them. For us, just a moment thinking of the Lord, it's done. You know? So it's I think also Kasyapa, yeah, same thing.
Why does he have so many pastimes?
How does he?
Why does he have so many pastimes with devotees if he's an impersonalist?
Just to, one is that, how you say?
He moves in the circles of the mode of goodness.
I mean, it's his lifestyles and goodness, so he's naturally going to be associated with those in goodness, which will include devotees. But his consciousness is very heavily affected by ignorance. That's the thing, is you can have your body, it's just like a cow. Its body is controlled and mind is controlled by goodness, though the living entity, the soul in that body is controlled by ignorance. They think they're a cow, they think they're the body. But they eat very, you know, simply, they sleep very little, you know, their nature is very gentle. So like that, he's created that his gross and subtle body are much more predominated by goodness in this way. But his own consciousness, he's very proud and all that. His ego is still strong. He hasn't conquered that. So you have all these different things happening at once. That's the thing. You know?
Yeah. So how can get so advanced like that without recognizing that Krishna is the source. I mean, you have to sacrifice someone to get these, you know, these punya, these powers. Hmm. So how do they just sacrifice the Brahman?
Yeah, but they can only get to Brahman. So that's why, see, from the material standpoint, that's very, very great. But for the devotees, it's not actually very great. It means that practically most, for the devotee, much of the time, he's actually liberated. But then, because he has a material desire still in the heart, then he may contemplate that, endeavor for that, and then he becomes conditioned by that again. Because the desire is there. Though, by chanting, he's cleared off all the reactions and everything to it. So he is on a liberated platform. So for us, it's a very simple thing. So for us, for all these stages, but the thing is we want to get to prema. So then, for us, the liberation is not a great thing. We don't see it from, you know, here looking through. There's, you know, there's liberation and then there's prema. We just see prema, and then it's like everything becomes squished this way. You know, it's just, you know. Yeah, like that.
Yeah.
And then everything in just comes out like that. It's the principle of the. It's big, but because you're taking a devotional service, the example is given to that you have this ocean of material life, material miseries. Then when one takes shelter of the instruction of the spiritual master, then when one goes to step on, when one steps onto that boat, the water becomes reduced down to the size of a calf's hoofprint, and one just steps across. And so the boat's still here. You didn't have to take the boat there and then everybody has to wait here while the guru comes back. The boat's still on the shore. Because as soon as you actually go to make that commitment to take that, it becomes reduced down to that and you just step over it. Like that. So that's happening. When we make that commitment, it just reduces. You know?
We're waiting for that.
Yeah. So it's just, but if we just stay with the process, it'll happen. There's no separate endeavor. We don't have to endeavor for liberation separately than how it automatically comes in devotional service. Like that. That's the thing. We don't have to automatically endeavor for humility. Krishna has arranged enough situations for us to practice our humility in. We don't have to, you know, go outside the front gate and, you know, stand there and get harassed by the rickshaw wallahs just to become humble. No, it's just as it is in our day-to-day life, you know, every day there's...
That's one of the arrangements.
Yeah. No, yeah, it's one of the arrangements. Krishna is arranging it that, oh, you mean when you... If you have to go out and take a rickshaw, then of course it's part of the whole program. But it's, you don't have to separately endeavor for it. It's automatically included in devotional service. You will get all these opportunities to use our intelligence, engage our activities, be humble, respect others, not commit offenses, you know, you know, how you say it? Try to remove the difficulties for offenses or improper things. We get those opportunities like that. If we want, Krishna will always remain, always, always give. Like that. Doesn't give to three. You'll have to ask the person who gave the class. Because I don't know who those three persons are, you know. No, that was last question. This is another question. So we'll end here. It's getting okay. Gajaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki Srila Prabhupada ki Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.